This is a Pinball News production.
As you can see, I've done some digging in my drawers and file cabinet drawers, that is, flat files. This was probably the second or third project that I worked on at Bally Pinball, which was Western and Belmont, roughly, in Chicago. I believe it was 1979. Anybody's welcome to jump in and correct me anytime on this. I had to do a lot of manipulating on this painting because I originally had the classic Star Trek uniforms, and about halfway through the project, the license and marketing people from Bally decided that they wanted to go with the uniforms from the first movie. So I painted directly over this painting. So I also had to put a new Enterprise as well as all new uniforms. As you could see, they acquired a license to use all the major characters in this. So that was quite a feat. There was at this point, there was no time to start all over again because I had basically pretty well gotten likenesses done, and I didn't want to paint likenesses over again. It's once you get it, you don't want to try to do it over again. I don't have much in the way of... not much is left, let's put it that way, in the way of playfield art. What happened to the original ink and screens is a mystery to me. But I do have an old brochure here. It's the original Star Trek brochure, and it shows a playfield on the back. Cabinet art at the time was still being done with stencils. So also, there is no existing art on there. You'd map out where you want them to cut the stencil out, and it was you probably all are all familiar with it. It was a big, giant piece of steel that they welded handles up onto, and they applied it right to the cabinet, and that's how they sprayed, you know, with this template that they had. The only other thing I have from this game is a little Buterit set here that shows a generic sort of sexy Star Trek girl in a leotard, whatever, generic, maybe it's a Romulan. So moving on, I was approached by Joe Kamenko at Data East in the 80s. I had a sheet here with all the dates written down, but I can't find it right now, to do a classic Star Trek, which I jumped at the chance, of course, to do. What I have here is some of the original pencil sketches, like very, very rough, just to get things started. You'll all be able to take a look at these. Here's a little tighter view here. I also have, here's a cabinet sketch that was, I wouldn't say rejected, but they wanted something a little different on it, so we've got an example of that. This is a magic marker sketch. This is the way I used to present these ideas. Here's one that's closer to what the actual production was on it. This is the actual painting for the back glass. As you can see, I have on an overlay the characters, which I painted separately because Joe had a way of, and maybe someone else here can explain it, I don't know, but he had a way of printing these on a lens where they appeared to transport into the transporter, which was actually painted on this painting behind here. You might notice a self-portrait that I snuck myself in there in the control room right here. I think I had a sketch of originally it was here, and I think Joe said maybe you want to put yourself in the back somewhere, a little further back. Here again, we had all the characters in the license, I believe. Yeah, there's Uhura on everyone. What I also have here is something you don't see much more of any these days, and this is a complete inking for the playfield. It's all done by hand, and it's done on a vellum. It's inked with a brush for the most part, and just compasses and just, you know, ancient drafting tools that we don't do it like that anymore. It's all done on the computer now. But that's a really good example of that. It probably takes about 3 weeks, and you can actually see some of the way we taped on film for the text on here. I'd say the paint, we work on the painting for about 4 weeks. All the screens are hand cut. All the colors, color separations were hand cut at the time. Margaret Hudson cut the screens for that. About every game in creation, except for Dave Christensen's. He used to ink them by hand, which is extremely tedious. I have a color shot of this play field too with the colors on it. We'll all be able to maybe come up and lay them out on the stage here later, and you can just all file up if you care to see them yet closer. I see Larry in the audience here, and maybe you can help me with some dates on the episode one and, about when we get started. It was the second Pinball 2000 after Revenge from Mars. I'm going to see if I can find my notes here, if you'll bear with me for a minute. Fall of 98. That sounds right to me. Yeah. I was very excited to be approached by this. To do any Star Wars art is exciting for an artist, especially to have the license and be sort of an official Star Wars artist. What we see here is some early rough sketches put together from partially from style guides, which we did receive extensive style guides from Lucas on this. And also we received 3D models, which I'll go down the lineup of, this was a John Papaduke game. Larry was in almost every meeting. I don't remember him not being in any meetings. It was Duncan Brown, was software design. Scott Slomiani was handling the 3D models that were coming in from Lucas for the video portion of this Pinball 2000. Cameron Silver, and he was programming also, was Jack Scalin. We had a sound, was it Adam? Eric, that's who it was. Eric Brisby. So actually, this went pretty smoothly with Lucas. They approved pretty much everything we were doing. We did little tweaks ourselves. But the team decided that, John Papaduke decided that he wanted a good side cabinet, the good characters, and an evil side with the evil characters. So I did two, there were two sides to this, the cabinet. Here's another rough sketch for the cabinet. The cabinet art was actually done all on 130x40 sheet, was airbrush and acrylics, and they look like this without the logo. These logos were stripped in later, but these were planned when put next to each other to flow one into the other. I had this sort of nebula that came out of one and went into another, so these paintings would look good next to each other. And then the shape was cut, or the decals were cut, with the back box here and the side cabinet here. But they were all done as one painting. The way I started this back glass painting was with colored pencils, the darker colored pencils like black, blue, and brown. And this is actually a copy. I actually put this on a Xerox machine. When I finished all the colored pencil underdrawing, which was my key to start painting, this is what it looked like. So there was a lot of detail in the beginning of this painting that was, especially in the city stuff, that there was no way to put that in, but at that time, then by hand. It was all done by hand. It was very tedious. Probably 4 or 5 weeks of painting just to do that back glass. We also have an example here of where I got involved in some of the storyboarding for the video. John would come up with ideas of how he wanted the video to work, the video portion, which was overlaid on the play field, and he needed storyboards. So this is an example of, this is a scene pod where you could choose scenes. This was a pod that was going to spin in the 3D world, and you could choose what video mode you wanted to play in. an example of just a color comp that I would give to the screen cutter, Margaret Hudson, and she would follow this for her portion of the project. I have some other here. I thought this was kind of interesting that we received Christmas cards from Lucasfilm that year. And so you can come up and take a look at that. Here is a set of Butyrates that were also probably a combination of my inking and some of their style guide black line stuff, and then we would fill in the color. They were, a lot of times it's better to just use what they give you, and you don't have to guess of whether they're going to approve it or not. It was a very interesting experience, this whole Star Wars episode one. We were flown out to California to the Skywalker Ranch, which is a compound, I would say, in Marin County. It's where George Lucas does all his business. And we were virtually locked away in a room to read a script, which we were not allowed to. They were very secretive about this. This was the beginning of the second trilogy, and they were very secretive about having any information leaked about it. So much to the extent that even Williams had to have a special cordoned off section back in Chicago where you had to have a security card to pass through the doors to where this project was being worked on. So the only other things I have here are maybe some of the reference material that they gave us to, and you could see where what I was working from to produce the painting of this. Here also, this was a plain mask. It was that I found at a Halloween store that I painted this, and I just used foam for the horns. And the reason we needed to do this is because I was asked to play the part of Darth Maul in the video portion with a laser fight. I can't remember where I got the rest of the costume, but it was basically, I think it was like it's just a short robe that I had. It was all black, and the rest of whatever we needed to do to make me look like Darth Maul was done digitally. But we did do some choreography. John Papaduke and I, he played the part of Qui-Gon Jinn. And we did spend a few hours getting the choreography together on this of how we were going to do our laser sword fight. And this was my double-edged sword that was produced in the shop at Williams for us and painted. As you can see, the blades are black, and later on the lightsaber colors were put in digitally. I believe there was an employee at Williams who was a martial artist, and we also needed to go to him to get some of the right moves down to use these weapons, and he helped us along with our choreography. So we had a lot of fun. It was probably like 110 degrees that, when we got all the stuff on, and John had the long hair, and I don't know if he had a beard at the time or had a fake beard or something, but it turned out looking okay, I thought, that portion. Any questions? Well, I think as the years went by, my art had a couple different looks. Like if you would look at perhaps Silver Ball Mania, it wouldn't look like this look. This is, I think I'd made an advanced over the years and got away, from less cartoony style. I mean, my first game was Strikes and Spares, which was basically kind of just a campy, cartoony thing. And I just, to answer your question, I think Meyer has advanced over the years, and now it wouldn't be recognizable at all because it's all digital and mostly comes from style guide art. There's really no fast way to do this anymore and to make sure that we get approvals. The best way to get approvals is to use the art that that comes from the licensor. For example, Batman, their style guide, is pretty. They pretty much want what's in their style guide, but for all the human characters on the Batman glass, I painted over them digitally. So I did have to paint every single, but I did not paint the Batman or the Bat Cycle. But they did want all we had. The only other thing, those are painted images that came from the licensor. There were none for more of the minor characters, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine. So I had to paint those to match, for instance, the Batman that's on the back glass of the new Batman pinball. Not sure that answers your question, but yes. Well, because the minor characters in the Batman were photographs, and they want them to match a painted style. They have what in their style guide, what's called painted art. So I used several items that were painted art from their style guide. So they said, well, we need the minor characters to match this so that it all flows and looks right. Just the Michael Caine, the Morgan Freeman, Gary Oldman. Yeah, Wheel of Fortune is all photographs. Yeah. Of course, we took pictures of people from the Stern factory, and Lonnie Ropp and Keith were also pictured in there. So I had to do a photo shoot with them at Stern and strip them in, and had to do things with their shirt, manipulate colors and stuff like that. Yes. Well, it has partially to do with economics. It partially has something to do with licensor approval, and that's actually one of the most huge stumbling blocks of all. These licensors, they give you this material and they expect you to use it, and they basically, I don't want to say they don't trust you to do it your way, but in answer to your question, my feeling is I'd love to paint every back glass. But there's not enough time, and it's more difficult to approve. And there's always going to be someone that says, that left eye looks funny, or, I've painted a picture of Elvis that I've heard someone say, it looks like Dean Martin, which, there's always going to be someone who sees things differently. So, yes. Revisions go on forever and ever and ever and ever. They go on till the last day, till it has to go on the line, till it has to go into production. And there are a lot of them. I would say the play field is the main place where the revisions are, because they move lights around. So I do play fields now modularly. When I do a background for a play field, I put it all over the play field and leave it there and start covering it with layers of other things. So in other words, if I have a gradation on a play field that goes from red on the top to orange to yellow, well, I make sure that I don't punch those holes out for where they're going to have mechanical parts. I leave that as a layer, which, that's one of the good things about the computer, because they keep moving these holes all over the place. So that's where most of the revisions are, is on the play field. Well, KISS was a game that came to, I was still at Western and Belmont at the time, and Tom Neiman was the one who brought the KISS license in to Bally at the time. And I couldn't say at the time that I was a big KISS fan, but they did send us to a KISS concert, and I was sold on that. It was in those days, it was quite a big production. They had explosions in the auditorium, I believe. I'm not sure where it was. It was an auditorium theater or something. They were doing pyrotechnics then that I had never seen before, so it was pretty impressive. And I wanted to make sure to convey that on their glass. So I did a full-size a Backlash sketch for Kiss, which was taken by Paul Ferris and Tom Neiman to Magic Mountain, where Kiss were performing in, I believe it was near Los Angeles. And there's a picture of them all together holding up the Backlash. And the comment came back from them that they wanted to be more muscular and more superhero-ish. So we went back to another revision on that and added some muscle to them. One interesting story, years later, Joe Cameco got backstage passes to go and speak to them about doing another Kiss game. And I was with him, and he said, bring the painting. I'm like, what for? And he's like, well, I don't know. You can get him to sign it or something. And I said, well, I really don't want a signature right on the painting. But I brought it anyway, and Gene Simmons saw it, and he said, come here. Let's talk about it. Let's talk here. I want to buy that from you. We have a Kiss museum. He goes, we're gonna make you famous. You've been laboring in obscurity for too long. And so he took me over into a corner and asked me, you know, what I wanted for the painting. And I don't know what he thought the number was going to be, but it had a bunch of zeros behind it. And he was like, okay, thanks. We'll get back to you. And never heard anything else from him again. So I still have the Kiss painting. That's fine with me. Yes. As far as Lucas goes, you have no rights. They own the rights to... I've never been able to reproduce any of that stuff. Anything else, like, for instance, Silverball Mania, there's no way for me to even put something together like that. It had mirror on it. It had a black screen. It had an airbrushed background. None of it exists completely together. Same with Silver Strikes and Spares, something like that. Only the ones that are paintings, and I'm not sure what the general public would even, you know, want to have in their hands. But I have reproduced Kiss and posters, and I've sold them at Kiss conventions. And as long as they don't have the word Kiss on them, they really don't bother you. And I've never had any problem with it. But that's the only one I've reproduced. The artwork for slot machines, I was with IGT for 8 years and basically made a career over there out of Adam's Family. They did several versions of that, and I would be involved also in the top sculptures and even in game design. I participated in a lot of game design meetings. But it was Adam's Family, Beverly Hillbillies. Geez, I was involved in probably 5 or 6 different models or versions of that. I did Elvis with Larry, and what was the name of that one, Larry? Multi-Strike, yeah. I loved doing that one. And that was one of the first digital paintings I ever did. I did it from scratch. I did it, I had photographs in the computer and just went over them, but I did completely paint them. In other words, I started with the eyebrows just the way you would do it, and started with, you know, then add the nose and then in the jawline, and then painted every single part of it in there. And I'm kind of proud of that one too. I did go on to a couple paintings I did digitally that I did go on to actually paint, where I repainted that Elvis by hand, traditional artwork. And I also repainted Pirates of the Caribbean. That's a big 30 by 40 acrylic painting. A gallery owner wanted me to paint them. So they're in a gallery in Naperville. It's attached to, it's a Thomas Kincaid gallery it's called Light of the Future Gallery in Naperville. It's on 59. It's in a sort of a strip mall. Yes. Well, you got to remember, I was in the same department as Dave Christensen. So I think it was considered mild next to some of the things that he was trying to push through.
So listen, for the next few minutes, what we'll have you do is come up front if you'd like, and you can look at the artwork, and then we'll have Jim get ready for his 3 o'clock presentation. Kevin, thank you very much.